Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Not Just a Lawyer podcast. I thought it was really important to also put out this podcast during NAIDOC week, so you'll be getting two this week and none next week. Hopefully you'll cope, I'm sure you will. I'm Sarah Avery of Sarah Avery Legal Practice, and this is another NAIDOC week episode of the Not Just a Lawyer podcast. We will be talking about issues that might be disturbing to some people. We'll be talking about coercive control and domestic violence. And what I'll be doing during this podcast is sharing a little bit of information, but then referring you to another publication. It is a recording of a conversation with Dr. Chelsea Watego, and you really, really need to listen to that. I highly recommend it. It is super, super important that you listen, and I will be giving the link to that publication in the show notes. I acknowledge that I'm recording this podcast on the traditional lands of the Ngunnawal, Ngunnawal and Ngambri people. I pay my respect to their elders past, present and emerging. I acknowledge their ongoing relationship and custodianship with the land and their ongoing culture, and that sovereignty was never ceded. As I said, this episode is going to touch on some things that might cause people some distress. Those issues are carceral feminism, that I'm going to explain in a minute what that means, because it's a term that has only really started hitting the mainstream media. Domestic violence and coercive control. So if you think that you're going to find these issues worrying, have a chat with someone you trust or give Lifeline a call on 1-3-1-1-4. So before we get really cracking into it, when you listen, and I say when, not if, because you are going to listen to the interview with Dr. Chelsea Watego, you will hear the term carceral feminism, and it might not be something you've heard before. You're also going to hear the term coercive control. That will be really well explained in the other podcast that you are going to go listen to. So I'm going to leave that there. So let me tell you what carceral feminism is. Basically, I think most of you would know that feminism is basically trying to make sure that women are equal to men. Not just that women are equal to men, feminism encompasses all genders. It's looking at equality and justice for everyone, making sure that patriarchy doesn't hold people who are not men down to a lower standard. That's basically the gist of what feminism means. What does carceral mean? Carceral refers to incarceration. So talking about feminism that believes inherently in incarcerating people for wrongdoing. It believes that incarceration is a solution to problems in society, and some of those problems include domestic violence. So there's a broader movement out there, often represented by Debbie Kilroy of Sisters Inside, that is looking to take people's mainstream views away from the assumption that incarceration is an appropriate solution for lots of society's ills. So that's a conversation that's going on out there, and I highly recommend that you look for some of the works of Debbie Kilroy to try and get that perspective. But what I want to talk about today is a couple of examples of my own criminal law work where I have experienced, well, I've seen my clients experience some of the problems that occur when different assumptions are made when police attend domestic violence incidents. And then I want you to go and listen to the interview with Dr. Chelsea Watego, who is talking about how coercive control laws, which are being proposed all around Australia, they're being considered by various governments at the moment, how those impact on Indigenous people, so Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people, because the impact on those people is more brutal. And as we know from the numbers of interactions with police that Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people have, it's going to be disproportionate. So it's really important to understand from a First Nations perspective what these laws are likely to do. So I want to talk about the assumptions that some police bring to domestic violence incidents. This is just anecdotal, and I'm going to do my very best to be as general as I need to be to protect the confidentiality of clients that I've represented. So I've represented people from different states and territories in Australia. One of the most recent domestic violence clients that I had was a woman, and she was charged with assault occasioning actual bodily harm against her partner. And it became apparent to me when I read the statement of facts that is prepared by police that she had acted in self-defense. The reason that I was able to glean that so quickly is because the facts indicated that her partner had held her on the ground by her neck. I decided that it was very pertinent to point out quickly to the prosecution that holding someone on the ground by their neck could also be known as choking or strangling. Now, my client, when the police arrived, was seen as the violent party, the hysterical party, the out of control, crazy party, even though my client called the police for assistance. The police, who were both men, turned up and spoke to the partner of my client, who presented as a rational, injured party. My client was perceived as a crazy person. Let me tell you about how gender roles played out in that situation. The police took photographs of my client's house and the state of disarray in which they found it. They considered it extremely pertinent to photograph the kitchen. Where am I going with this? The photograph simply showed spilt milk. If that's not a great metaphor for the lens through which police were viewing this situation, I don't know what is. Very fortunately for my client, the prosecutors agreed with the situation that I pointed out to them, and my client had their charges dismissed. But my client shouldn't have been charged in the first place. It was extremely clear, even from the interview with her partner, that she had been acting in self-defense. It is unfathomable to me that the police could duly write down that my client had been held on the ground by her neck and not see how her actions, which I'm not describing because it might make her more identifiable, but that her actions were not the only actions available to her in that situation to stop her from being choked or strangled. It is absolutely unfathomable to me that the police, when just transcribing the complaint by the injured person, didn't see exactly what had happened, because it was very clear to me upon reading it immediately what had happened. And my opinion is that that comes down to the lens through which those police officers looked at the situation. Now, I'll talk about another situation briefly in which a different outcome was had. My client in this next scenario was found guilty and did suffer some punishment, but it was a lot milder than it could have been. This is a matter in which I may still make a complaint against the police for their dealings with my client, even though she has been found guilty, because of the attitude taken by the prosecutor in court, who in that matter was a police prosecutor. My client was in a domestic violence relationship. It had its ups, it had its downs, like many relationships of that kind. Sometimes things were good, sometimes things were bad. My client alleged that she had been thrown down the stairs. And when she came to, the perpetrator, who in her court proceedings was the victim, advanced upon her. She grabbed the first thing that came to hand, which was a knife sitting on the kitchen table, and she swung it at him. He laughed at her and continued to advance upon her, And so she struck him with a knife. And can I say, it was a very deliberate choice by the police when putting together the statement of facts in this particular matter, and even how they gave their evidence in court, that they said she struck him with the knife, not that she stabbed him with the knife. Now, I advanced a self-defense argument on behalf of my client, which the local magistrate didn't buy. My strong belief is that my client did not present as the ideal victim in that matter. She had been intoxicated, and the magistrate believed that she should simply have left the premises when feeling threatened. This ignores the fact that this took place in the middle of the night. When my client had been drinking, she had nowhere else to go. Sometimes it's not so simple. These are two examples where the person who I would argue is the victim is treated as a hysterical, out of control, irrational person. One went one way where a good outcome ultimately was had. One went the other way. Look, the circumstances of that relationship and the struggle my client had were taken into account in sentencing, but my view is that she ought not have been charged at all. And I say that even in light of the fact that the magistrate made a different decision. I can disagree with it and still consider the courts to be a legitimate institution. My client had appeal rights in that matter, which she could have exercised, but she did not wish to do so because she wanted the matter to be brought to an end. So I want to highlight, I'm not disrespectful of the courts. Good outcomes and just outcomes can be had. But what we need to be looking at is what happens when decisions are made by police that lead people to go to court in the first place. Now I'm going to hand you over to Dr. Chelsea Watergo. And when I say hand you over, I really want you to click on the link in the show notes and go straight to listen to her interview, because you need to know the perspective that Indigenous people are coming from when looking at coercive control laws. And the reason I've been talking about domestic violence clients that I have represented is because coercive control, as you will learn when you listen to Dr. Chelsea Watergo, is a type of domestic violence. Before you listen to Dr. Chelsea Watergo, it might be useful for you to know that a lot of people opposing coercive control laws are opposing them on the basis that women are often treated as hysterical, crazy perpetrators by police. But Dr. Chelsea Watergo is going even further in her opposition to coercive control laws, and I want you to listen to the underlying reasons that she thinks they're a terrible idea. So please have a listen. When you listen to Dr. Chelsea Watergo, you'll be listening to a 21-minute interview on 3CR Tuesday Breakfast. This interview was given on the 6th of July 2021, so it's extremely recent, and that's why I'm releasing two episodes this week, because I want you to be able to listen to it in a timely fashion. So 3CR Breakfast says, they speak to Dr. Chelsea Watergo, a Mununjali and South Sea Islander woman whose work has drawn attention to the role of race in the production of health inequalities. We discuss carceral feminism and the implications of criminalising coercive control for Indigenous women. What you'll see in this interview is that this is not just an issue that affects Indigenous women. If anything that I've spoken about right now causes you distress, makes you feel bad, makes you feel really upset, as I've said earlier, please talk to someone you trust, or if you need to, give Lifeline a call on 1311 14. I'm Sarah Avery of Sarah Avery Legal Practice. Thank you for listening. And please now go and listen to Dr. Chelsea Watergo. As I said, the link is in the show notes. Go there right now and have a listen.